Good morning and welcome into the outdoor program. I'm your host, George Grant, and I'm telling you to get out. Get out, stay out, and play all day. My guest this morning is Chris Soche. He's the project technical director for the Boone Dam Repair. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you're well this morning, even if it is a little early for a Saturday, huh?
Well, you know, I appreciate you getting me up early. I've got a lot of things to do this morning, so you got me up, and I'm moving, and we'll get some things done before the rain comes in.
All right. Now, you've been involved with the project since its initiation, is that right?
That's right.
And could you give me a brief outline of the problem at Boone Dam and the stages and steps involved in the repair?
Yeah, and that's a good reminder for us to sort of look back and how we've got to where we are today. So back in October of 2014, we had plant staff that were arriving at the dam for their daily job of operating the plant, and they noticed a sinkhole in the parking lot, and it was situated about 50 feet away from the toe of the earthen dam, not the concrete dam, but the earthen dam at the site. And then a matter of days later, we saw some muddy discharge in the tail race, and those two signs together are known in our profession to be dangerous signs of a process that we call internal erosion. So to mitigate that process, we've constructed several components to improve the condition of the dam. So we started with two kinds of grouting lines injecting grout into the ground. The first one's kind of a peanut butter consistency. We call that low mobility grout, and that was used to fill holes in the top of rock. Then we went and created a deeper injections of a more chocolate milk-like consistency grout called high mobility grout, and that forms a seepage barrier deep beneath the dam. Then we constructed berms at the site, so we added onto sides of the dam that was existing at the time. We put these rock-fill berms out there on the upstream and downstream sides, and then we got to the most dramatic piece and the piece that really mitigated this internal erosion problem, and that's the cutoff wall. And so that was initiated about 2 years ago, a little more than 2 years ago, and finished up this past January, so coming up on a year now that has been finished. And that really took care of the critical problem that we were trying to fix. So we do have a few things that are left to do. Right now, we're building a flood wall on top of the dam, and the reason we're doing that is for us to build the cutoff wall, the one we finished in January, we needed to have a really wide working platform for all the equipment out there, so we cut 10 feet off the top of the dam, and so we're going back now and putting a flood wall on top of the dam to restore that 10 feet so we have the same level of flood protection for folks downstream. So that's underway right now, going really well. That's on track, a little bit ahead of schedule. We've got some other pieces which are sort of site-related. You know, I know the public will be very interested in the pieces, and that's the restoration of the visitor center at the site. We've got a new picnicking platform there, a pavilion that folks will be able to enjoy. Restoring the beach, that's pretty much done right now, and putting some bathroom facilities at the site so we can make the site better than it was before, and the public would get to enjoy all those facilities that they had before all this began. So that's remaining, and the other piece, I guess, that's remaining is for us to take out a temporary filter that we put in the tail race. So this is a rock and a sand structure that's actually in the river beneath the dam where the power generating units are, and we're going to take that out. We needed that during the construction process until this cutoff wall was completed. So the cutoff wall permanently mitigates the problem of internal erosion. This filter that we placed there was needed for us to help temporarily mitigate that so we could build the cutoff wall. But now with the cutoff wall built, we're going to take it out, and we fully expect that when we take that out, we're going to see some signs of muddy discharge, and we just don't want folks to be alarmed that, oh my gosh, here we go again, because the real truth is we have mitigated the dangerous source of water, which is from the reservoir. We might still have water coming off of topographic highs right around the site. You know, that's sort of the normal flow of groundwater in the area. But the dangerous problem that poses a threat to the dam has been fully mitigated by the wall, so this filter is no longer needed.
All right. Now, I'm kind of curious, if you were using grout to fill up voids in the geology under the dam, and the voids were what were causing the leak, The grout can cure and solidify even underwater, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a really interesting question. And there's a lot of the chemistry of it. It's like cement, right? It's like cement. It's not quite concrete, but it's pretty much cement mixed with water, and it can cure under the ground and harden the same way that cement would. And in fact, you know, that's a very common treatment for that kind of situation where there are voids in rock.
How do you determine you've got all the little holes filled up? How do you know with confidence that all the channels that the water could take through that geology under the berm have been taken care of?
It's a pretty sophisticated operation. You know, it sounds like we've just got a truck out there and we're shooting some chocolate milk type grout in the ground. But what you do is you measure the pressures while you're doing that, and you can actually measure the flow while you're doing it. And when those reach some kind of limiting amount, then you know you've put at that particular location as much as you can really put in. And you essentially do that until every location you go to, you get the pressure and the flow criterion that you're looking for. And if you don't get it at one location, say you got a hole that's 10 feet away from the next closest hole and neither one of them met that criterion, well, you put one between them and you do it again, and you put one between that if it didn't work, and you do it again. So you can get these holes very, very close together, but ultimately you do it until you know that at the locations you've treated, you've pressurized them and you're measuring the flow out of those holes until you know that grout went to every conceivable place it could go. That's the first thing. It's while you're doing it. The next thing is after it's done, after the grout has hardened, as you say, and of course, in this case, after we put the cutoff wall in, we monitor the site with hundreds of pieces of instrumentation in the ground, and they can tell us how effective that was as a sort of proof of performance. So one thing you're doing while you're building it, and the other thing you're doing is a check after it's done. And both of those signs, we had very good indications while we were building that it was going to be effective. Since that time, with the pool coming up this past summer and basically giving us a reservoir at the level it's always been, the instrumentation tells us that it was also effective. So we have a couple measures that tell us we did exactly what we needed to do.
All right. Now, another thing I was kind of interested in finding out about was taking off the 10 top feet of the earthen portion of the dam. Was that the reason Boone was pulled 10 feet below its normal winter pool?
No, that's a really interesting question. No, the reason we pulled the pool down is this phenomenon where water could flow from the upstream area where the reservoir is to the downstream area, where the river is. We were concerned that it was flowing with too much force, too much velocity beneath the dam. And so one way that we could mitigate how much water could be flowing beneath the dam way, way back in October before we did anything out of the site was to lower the level of the pool upstream. So basically, you think the differential that's then driving that flow underneath the dam is decreased because we took the water level down upstream.
Okay, so it was a question of water in the reservoir, how much pressure it would generate to create an increased flow through the channels.
That's exactly right. Yes.
All right.
That's exactly right. So all those things were done out of and I know that's the piece obviously that made this the most visible and certainly has brought impacts to folks in the area. But you can see now with that in mind that it was really done as a measure of safety for the folks that live downstream.
Yeah, because there's a lot downstream of Boone, isn't there?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
A few small towns, right? Let's see, Kingsport.
Yeah. Just I know it's difficult for folks to understand that the balancing act that we have to do sometimes, but we just had to keep in mind at all times that the safety of the public was the most important thing, and certainly the safety of the folks performing the work. So it makes you arrive at some tough decisions sometimes, but it was the right thing to do in this case.
No, indeed. My guest this morning is Chris Soche, who is the project technical director for the Boone Dam repair. And we've been talking about the history of the repair. Chris, is there a particular timeline for when everything's done? Are we looking at next year, and what time next year?
Yeah, so there's really kind of a two-part question. The project will have everything completed to what we call normal operations, and for our purposes, that means that the site can operate as it did before all this started, and that'll be in late July of next year. So our target date for that is the 29th of July. But the truth of the matter is that the public facilities, the things that people are probably most interested in, the beach area, that visitor pavilion, the visitor center at the site, those things we're targeting to have open by Memorial Day of next year, so that folks can get out and enjoy the parts of the site that they were able to enjoy before all this began. So that's, for our purposes, again, normal operations is late July, but these other public pieces we think will be Memorial Day. And I should mention, even though I say normal operations is late July, we fully anticipate going forward that the pool levels in the reservoir will be pretty much the way they've always seen them. So we took the pool up, as this past summer, all the way up to its usual summer level. It's down now within a matter of inches of where it historically was during the winter before 2014, and we fully expect that normal schedule of us coming up, starting in late February, getting up to full pool and around late spring, staying there through August, and then coming back down in mid-December. So that's the cycle that people will see now going forward.
All right, and Boone is in kind of a unique position as far as the dams up here in Northeast Tennessee is concerned, isn't it? I mean, Watauga is a very deep reservoir, and Holston's a deep reservoir with a lot of storage capacity, which is maximized with the winter drawdown. But Boone doesn't have quite that much capacity, does it?
It doesn't have as much. It needs to pass some for sure. Of course, Fort Pat Henry is much, much smaller. It has practically just very little. So
I think Fort Pat's called a run of the river dam, isn't it?
That's right. That's exactly right, George. You are hip to the lingo, man. You're all over this thing. That's awesome. And so you're right. And of course, Boone, with its location at the confluence of the Watauga and South Holston, it's critical in that sense too. And those two reservoirs, for recreational purposes with fishing and also for water quality, passing that cold water downstream through Boone is an important piece.
All righty. And how many projects like this have you been associated with this type of dam repair?
Well, this one's pretty unique. This really was my first for this kind of repair. I've been involved in, dozens of major dam repairs. So it's not that a major dam modification project is anything new, but this was really a unique project, and frankly, unique in the world. For a time, this was the largest dam safety modification project in North America, and I think we don't know this for certain, but we think that probably likely makes it the largest in the Western Hemisphere. There's some in Asia that are quite a bit larger, but this was a huge project, and it involved a unique set of equipment and a unique type of expertise, and so it really was one of those once-in-a-lifetime kind of projects.
Now, the Wolf Creek Dam was not a TVA dam. It was a Army Corps of Engineers dam, wasn't it?
That's correct.
And it had a similar problem, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Wolf Creek, and then Center Hill Dam also had a similar problem. So it's not this kind of problem. The geology that causes these things is sort of endemic to the region, and it sort of crops up in very very unique locations. So our project even was different than those two projects because the geology there, while it still had that vulnerability of the limestone being soluble so that water can dissolve pieces of it, and that happens over geologic time, not really during our lifetimes. But, our geology was not flat. You can imagine sort of a deck of cards, and if you put them down on a table, each one of those cards represents a layer of rock, and that was what existed at Center Hill and at Wolf Creek. Here, you'd have to take that deck of cards and then slant it, so you're holding up at like a 45-degree angle or something, yeah. And that's the conditions we had here at Boone, which were pretty unique, because then the edges of those cards are sort of points, and they're up and down, and there's soil in between them, so it was a really complicated condition. Fortunately, the specific set of vulnerabilities that we saw here at Boone, we don't think exist at other dams. There are pieces of it that do, so there certainly is soluble limestone at other dam sites. But, you know, the upended geology, the fact that there were some relic shear zones, also ancient parts of the geology and folds in the rock, all those things are huge factors that we don't really see the whole combination of them at any of our other sites.
All right. So it's not the kind of problem that could show up again, say, at South Holston or at Cherokee.
Yeah, I think it's very unlikely. You never say never. It's amazing how the force of water can sometimes surprise you, but it's not something we expect to see, certainly not to this magnitude at any of our other sites.
Okay. I had no idea we had a world-class solution to a world-class problem here.
And, George, we're just so thankful for, the resources, the folks that were involved on this project. But, the project was recognized by the Association of Engineering Geologists as its Project of the Year last year. So this is an international group of engineering geologists, and that project was right here in our backyard.
All right. That's sort of the Nobel Prize of dam repair, isn't it, I guess?
Pretty cool, yeah.
Now, how do we keep track of the repair's performance into the future?
Yeah, and so I mentioned we've got an extensive array of instruments. So these are sensors that have been placed in holes drilled in the ground, and some of them are in rock, some of them in soil, but there are 200 of them. They're all over the site, and we monitor those for, it's largely pressure. We do monitor movements at some locations as well, but it's largely pressure because we're talking about water flow, and when water flows from one area to another, it transfers that pressure. So what we were able to see is that you can imagine if you have a river flowing, the flow of water from upstream to downstream, it sort of follows a straight line path. But if you were to dam it up, all of a sudden you see the pressures on upside of that, on the upstream side, getting higher, and the ones on the downstream side getting lower. And in fact, that's exactly what we saw. That was one indicator that things were working as we intended. And we've got those instruments all over the site. So throughout the entire footprint of the dam, we saw that trend, which was just great, great news. It's also great, George, because it gives us kind of a new baseline for performance, right? So we effectively built a dam inside our dam, and we needed to understand for posterity, for the future, what might constitute something looking a little bit off, if anything, at some point in the future. So we collected enough data during this raise during the past year to tell us we've got a good baseline, and if we ever were to see anything unusual, we've got enough data to say, oh, yeah, this is something odd. But we haven't seen anything like that yet, and I certainly don't expect to anytime soon.
All righty. Chris Soche, who's the project's technical director for the Boone Dam Repair, and I was amazed to learn that the Boone Dam Repair was a world-class feat of engineering, apparently. I'm quite impressed. Maybe it's going to be a textbook case here when it comes to civil and geological engineering. I'm kind of wondering, is Boone back completely online when it comes to generation at this point? In other words, is it producing the amount of electricity it produced prior to the problem being discovered and worked on?
It is not, George. In fact, so that's I'm glad you asked. So this allows us to clarify kind of what we mean by normal operations. So we're going to get that unit back online. We've got two out of the three generating units working right now. For us to get the third one back online, that's the piece that really comes out in July of 2022 and constitutes for us pretty normal operations. And just so you know, that's the important piece that relates back to this tail race filter that I was talking about. So I know your listeners are fishermen, boaters. They're going to be out and around the dam. So, you know, for us to get that unit online, we're going to take out that temporary filter. That's the sort of, it looks like a berm of rock and sand that's in the river just below those generating units. And so when we do that, just again, don't want folks to be alarmed. We fully expect there will be some muddy water coming out of the bank in that area, and it's going to look an awful lot like it looked back in 2014. But the threat to the dam, the flow upstream from the reservoir to the downstream and that area, has been fully mitigated by this wall. So that's not a threat to the dam. It's just a natural flow of groundwater patterns at that point. So they'll see that as we take that filter out. And as soon as that filter comes out, we've got to do some testing on those units that you mentioned. And then come July 29th next year, all that generation capability will be back, and the channel will be open as it always has been.
All righty. And the muddy discharge is just while that filter structure is being taken out. It's not going to be continually muddy, is it?
Well, we think there probably will be some persistent muddy discharge from that bank long term. We don't, that means maybe not the magnitude people saw before. If there was a contribution from the reservoir, it certainly would make it worse. But we'd expect that on occasion there will be muddy discharge from the bank long term. And again, that represents flow from sort of the higher areas at the site, and they're being sort of channeled that way now. But the flow, since it's not coming from the reservoir, doesn't pose a threat to the dam.
Okay. And is that muddy flow, is it expected to impact Fort Pat downstream, the reservoir downstream?
No, I think, the amount of that flow gets diluted pretty quickly. So it's not something I think anyone would notice unless they're right in the area of Boone Dam. And when I say right in the area, I mean a matter of, within hundreds of feet downstream of the dam. Other than that, you won't be able to tell anything.
Okay, so it's not going to be a huge transport of silt or other materials into the river channel and then subsequently into Fort Patrick Henry Reservoir.
No. It'll be more than usual, I guess, as you said, while we're taking it out. But we've got measures in place. We're going to put a cofferdam across the river like we did before, mm-hmm. And some silt curtains and capture that stuff near the dam. So you're right that while we're taking it out, there will be quite a bit of sediment. But once that's finished and it's permanently out and we're running units, I don't think it's something that folks will notice.
All righty. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you feel is important about the work that's been done, the work that still has to occur, and what the future holds?
Well, I would just say, you mentioned it. It really has been the effort. It's a world class, and I know, frankly, for folks in the area, they may not care so much about that as they just want facilities back. And we're happy to tell folks, look, Memorial Day, you'll be able to get out on the site, enjoy those facilities as you always have. So that's point one. That's super exciting news. Second piece, we touched on, our expectation that there will still be some of that discharge from the bank. It's nothing to be alarmed about. That's important that folks don't, they get worried that, oh my goodness, this might be happening again. We're 100% confident that the real threat's mitigated. And the last thing, and it really goes really great with your notes at the top of the hour about the weather coming in today, is just when people are out on the lake, just be safe. It's in some ways a new lake, and folks have to be treated that way in terms of a set of new conditions as they get back out there. And so just be safe. And then especially today, obviously, be weather safe. We're just thinking about all those folks out in the western part of the valley in Kentucky and Illinois who might have been impacted by the severe weather overnight, and want folks to be safe today. So.
All righty.
I guess that's all that we have in our minds.
Chris, I really appreciate your taking time out of your Saturday morning to talk with my listeners about this. I want to congratulate you on being involved in a world-class project. And you've got a free soapbox anytime you need it if you want to talk about any of the issues that pertain to Boone Dam or any other problems in the area that you're involved with, okay?
All right, George, I just thank you so much for your help and, us getting some of these messages out of the community. I really appreciate the work you do.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to do it. And I hope you can have some fun for the rest of Saturday.
Yeah, thank you.
All righty. Chris Soche, who's the Boone Dam Repair Project's Technical Director.